Everybody there, you would have been okay.
Okay, everyone, we're ready to get started. I want to welcome you to our work session, our budget work session today. And those in the audience, thank you for being with us. And this is a work session. It's not a public hearing, anything like this. The plan would be, if the council agrees, that it would be on our agenda this coming Monday night. So we'll run through it. Roger, of course, will lead us through it. And then a little bit later on, if there are questions, then certainly you'll have an opportunity to comment. Okay? All right. Roger, turn it over to you.
Okay. The budget's broken down into three main sections. The first section is general fund. That's what most of the citizens are interested in because that's where their taxes, vehicle taxes, property taxes come from. The second section would be our water and sewer. We call that our enterprise fund. It's a standalone fund. The funding that comes in for water and sewer from the typically the water bill pays for the expenses in utility funds. And then the third section is a number of small areas that, again, stand alone, stormwater, the theater, accommodation taxes, the airport, community development block grant funds, the industrial park, victim advocacy, those types of things. And again, each one of those is a standalone budget where the expenses have to go ahead and have a revenue stream. The revenue stream has to equal the expenses on a year-to-year basis. I've given you the preliminary message for this year. In my estimation, the economy is improving ever so slightly, here in Aiken at least. We're seeing a number of indicators towards that. The budget has basically fully funded the depreciation for vehicles and equipment. Last year, we eliminated the depreciation for vehicles and equipment in many, many of the areas, especially in utilities. And utilities, it's fully funded for those areas. We're still not fully funded for our building maintenance. That would be if you had to replace a roof or you had some major repairs on the building. We still have quite a bit of money set aside within those areas. Even though we're not fully funding it, it's split up between public works, the areas of public safety, and we have right now in those areas, in the building maintenance for this building, we still have $75,000 once the after all the expenses are paid out of next year's budget. At the end of next year, we should still have $75,000. Public safety, $325,000. Park, recreation, and tourism, $350,000. And then about $50,000 for our public works building out on DuPont Avenue. So we felt we'd get by another year until the economy starts getting totally back on its feet. Just so kind of give you a comparison, between a couple of years ago and where we are at right now, this year's budget compared to a couple of years ago, we're still 55% down on building permits. We have about 35% decrease in state revenue. Big one is 85% loss on interest. That's because it was at 4 to 5%. Now we're at less than 0.5%. I keep telling Kim we can't get any lower. She told me to not ask anymore. Vehicle taxes are down about 15%. That's a very interesting one. And about 10 years ago, we had a fairly high rate that people paid on their vehicles. And the legislature decided that over a five-year period of time, they would reduce about 6% on the vehicle taxes. At that time, we had about $1.2 million coming in. They felt the growth, the number of sales and the price would take care of it, and you would be whole at the end of that period of time. So we were at $1.2 million, now we're down to about $775,000. So we have lost quite a bit in that. It was And we're one of the growing cities. And so some of these smaller cities are in much worse shape than we are. That, along with telecommunication, that again was over $1 million, and we're now getting about $300,000. So those two alone, we've lost part of the revenue over the years. I gave you amount, the building permits amounts to about $150,000 loss, $240,000 loss in the state revenue, $380,000 loss in interest. And altogether, our revenues and expenditures have shrunk by about 1% compared to 2 years ago. Now, last year was about 8%. This year, we've caught up with several of the areas. The personnel, last year we had three public safety positions that we did not fill. We did get a grant in that allows us to hire all those positions plus one more. It amounts to $188,000 in this year's budget. So we have filled all those plus one additional one. That grant is good for 3 years. Dick Dwyer was asking a couple occasions what happens with those grants when they're over with. In most cases, you have to keep the personnel for at least 1 year beyond that grant period of time. We have always been expanding our public safety, so that's never been a problem. So assuming that in 3 more years we're not expanding, then we may have to, through attrition, let some people go. But we haven't seen that problem in the past. When the latest grant that we have is the what we call HEAT grant, the Highway Enforcement Traffic Control Group. Depending on which way you want to look at it, they have more than paid for themselves. Their grant cycle ended last year. So we're at a point again where do you keep mine or not? But we've seen very evidently that they're paying for themselves. Number one, reducing the number of accidents and the number of fatalities. We were having anywhere from 2 to 3 to 4 fatalities a year.
This past year, Pete, we haven't had any fatalities at all.
Not in the city.
Yeah. So, again, by people obeying the laws, obeying the speed limit, we have less fatalities. And the accidents are down, and the revenue's up from fines and forfeitures.
And the DUIs are down, too. It's the same group that was enforcing
the DUIs are down.
No, they're way up.
They're way up, that's what I thought.
I mean, as a result
the number of arrests, yeah, with double the amount of DUIs.
Yeah, but as a result of the heat?
Being part of this, that's correct.
Yeah, so DUI arrests are way up, which again, I think is a direct correlation with accidents and fatalities going down. And we've been recognized, our officers have been recognized for that throughout the state. We still have 5 positions that are not filled. And when I say not filled, at one time they were filled. And when these individuals left, we just not filled them back up. And so it's what we call they're frozen. And they'll continue to be frozen until we see the economy improve at some point in time. Personal property taxes, the funding we're getting from that is up about $300,000 in the last couple of years. Building permits, although they've been down the last couple of years, we're starting to see a change. In talking to Mike Jordan, our building inspector, the number of single-family homes in the last few months has increased. And everything we're reading from the national side is that we've hit the bottom. It's going to take a long time to ever get back up to where we were, which was close to 700 new single families. This year compared to last year, we'll probably have about the same number of single family homes. But again, we were in a period of time from the 1st of July till the end of January, we had probably no single family permits coming in. But we've seen a large number, anywhere from small to large homes. So we're real pleased, and we think that's going to continue. Last year, we did have a 1% increase for our full and part-time employees. We have that in this budget again. I was asked by a citizen, how can you justify a 1% increase? Well, we had a 5% increase in our health insurance that employees pay. That means that if an employee had family coverage, that would amount to, they pay close to $6,000 a year. It comes out of their payroll. 5% is about $300 a year that they're paid extra. And that 1% does not even cover the insurance increase. About a third of our employees make less than $29,500. So, or $30,000. So, 5% increase on insurance is $300. That means a 1% would just make it even. So, several of our employees lost money this past year with the health insurance, and I'm sure the health insurance is going to go up again this year. Hopefully, at one time, we were in double digits increase, and when we started doing all the wellness benefits, we went down to single digits, and there's been a couple of years we didn't have any increase at all. But so that's what's in the budget. The security that you asked at HO Weeks, we do have two security officers now. They work part-time. They're mainly working nights and weekends. That happened after the gun incident that was at HO Weeks. They started working last fall. One of them has now become a public safety officer. And we have two new individuals. First two were males, these last two are females. So we felt equal rights on that particular issue. Camera equipment has been ordered, and some will be paid for in this year's budget, some that's paid for in next year's budget. We have $80,000 in next year's budget for cameras and call boxes and other things over at HO Weeks and Smith Hazel. We still have money in there. We have not stopped. Again, I highlight this so that if you decide you do not want to go ahead and continue this, we do have $12,000 in there for the library, $60,000 in there for ADDA, the Best Friends Express, $15,000 is in the budget for that. Economic Development Partnership, that's the group that headed by Fred Humes that brings in new primarily industrial customers and then works with the existing ones we have. There's $10,000. And then there's $9,000 in the victims advocacy and $9,000 in there for the Covey Center. Every time there's a fine paid, typically we get up to $25 of that, goes into a victim's fund, and that adds up to about $90,000, which we have a person and a half working with the victims, but then we also set aside some money for the child advocacy at Covey Center. So if the Covey Center or the other one talks to you and says, you know, why aren't you doing this, this, and this? We are assisting them, and we started doing this only a couple of years ago. To my knowledge, North Augusta is considering it, and I don't think Aiken County is giving them on a year-to-year basis like we're doing. So I think we're assisting them the best way that we can. A couple of the things that we're also providing is from the accommodation tax money. That's the visitor hotel fee money. There's money in there for bathrooms. $6,000 that we support at the Center for the Arts. If you see in the front of the store, they have it public restrooms. That was a concern that we had in the 80s and 90s from several of the downtown merchants that people want to come and use their bathroom, and they really don't like that, so they always send them down to the Center for the Arts because it's open on Saturdays, primarily when most of the stores are open. They're open. And, of course, that we have our public restrooms here. So we give them some money to help support them with that. Along with that, we also have funds in here to do some studies. We're continuing with our North Side study on transportation, looking at where future roads and other improvements need to be made. Doherty Road, South Carolina 19. Funding is in here to continue with the retirement health benefits, post-retirement. GASB 45, which was initiated for our size cities a couple of years ago. We had an actuarial come to council maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And this was prior to us needing to go ahead and fund this, but we felt it was important enough that we wanted to consider putting money aside. That's money set aside. They figure that with the baby boomers retiring, you're just going to start getting more and more cost from the retirees that your plan can't pay for on a year-to-year basis. We have always covered those costs on a year-to-year basis. So they said you need to set up a fund to look at future costs in the health benefits. This was required in the private sector and now they're required in the public sector. So when we first asked our actuary to look at this, the cost was going to be well over $1 million per year. And we said, we only have three or four retirees every year, the last 20-some years. Most of the people that hire out of the city are here for 5 years or 10 years or 15 years and never even get that retirement age, although we have some. So the first thing we did is we raised the retirement age for getting health insurance for all new employees up to 65 years of age. We then also said you had to be here for 20 years before you could even be eligible for a percentage of that. So last year we had the actuary look at it again. He has come down tremendously in the amount that he feels we need. We think as they continue to look at our system, they'll see that his numbers are out of line. We have about $1 million in the bank right now saved up. We have not touched it at all. We could, if we needed to, even beginning this year, and withdraw from that fund. Our major concern is the fact that it has to go ahead and be a trust fund. By that, you cannot touch those funds unless it's used for the stated purpose of the trust, in this case, paying for the health benefits. So last year, we've been putting in $300,000. This year, we only put in $225,000 because we don't want to build up that trust too high and then have money that is not going to be used in a good manner in the future. So we only put in $225,000 this year, and we'll continue to fund that until we find out we either have enough money in there or our actuaries come up with some numbers that we feel are a little bit more in line with the employees that we have here and the entire system that we have here.
So how much did we spend on retiree benefits last year?
From this fund, zero.
No, period.
What'd you say about it?
They're all FMSC employees.
Last year we had probably about $3 million in expenditures. We could look and try to do a breakdown if you'd like.
No, I mean, for example, let's pick Anita Lilly. Are we paying her retirement benefits?
She has to pay her portion for family care, but yep. Otherwise, if she got sick or injured, we'd be paying for those costs.
So that was my question. We don't break that out?
We haven't in the past.
How can you possibly know your... How can anybody tell us that we're okay with $245,000 if we haven't...
Well, again, the actuaries have told us we are not okay with that amount of money. Okay. We don't feel... We have only seen them cut their numbers substantially. I can't remember if it was in half or...
Well, and the other thing is they're anticipating with the new health care, the national health care, that the actuaries will have to change some of their assumptions. But we don't know what those changes and assumptions are going to be going forward.
But every assumption that we've read about regarding the new health care plan is more bad than good. I mean, everything I have read is everything is sugarcoated on the part of the people that passed it. I don't want to get political, but they all say it's going to be wonderful, it's going to decrease the deficit. Everybody else say, heck no, it's going to increase the deficit. So is it likely that we're going to be even more deficient in retiree health care funding?
Typically, when a retiree hits age 65, they go on
this Medicare supplement.
Yeah, medical supplement, Part D.
No, there's both.
But they normally go on a supplement, and therefore then we become secondary.
Yeah, we would pay the medical supplement. Do we do anything, Kim, for drugs for retirees?
They have the same benefits that active employees have.
So, which is, we're paying the drugs?
We pay a portion of it.
Copay.
There's a copay. Zero on $5 on generic, and then it's $30 or $40 on another one.
What would the actuaries say we should be putting aside for our retiree benefit program?
For the public, $1 million or so? A little less than $1 million a year.
How do they justify that?
Again, they're based on the fact that an employee is going to start and all employees are going to be here for 30 years.
It's a very complicated formula based on all of our employees, their ages when they're hired, how long they're expected to stay, the health care costs.
I don't recall, Kim. What did our auditor say about that?
We are one of the few cities that they've seen actually set money aside.
Most of them aren't setting anything aside.
We're setting aside and recognizing that liability.
Most of them don't have it set aside, especially this little place.
We were one of the very few that has set any money aside, period.
Which is no consolation if our retirees get to a point that we don't have the money to take care of. That's why they went, that's why the SB 45 was put in, even for the public sector, was put in late for the public sector.
Correct.
I mean, it just absolutely guarantees that you're going to have the money to provide retiree health care benefits.
Not to, again, take it, if we would have started setting aside the money like they had asked us originally, one, I don't know where the money would come from, but yeah, we'd have had probably $4-6 million in there and not using it.
We haven't used it, right?
Right.
And there's no reason to believe, at least short term, we need to use it.
Correct.
Or we need to increase it. Is that correct?
That's our assumption.
I mean, that's
our assumption. They also feel like the auditing rules on this will probably change in the future, and they're not going to be nearly as stringent as they once were.
I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I don't think you have a category, an account that covers retiree benefits, do you? I mean, you're mixing them in with the employees, for example, the retirees.
It's part of our.
And the active employees are all, it would just seem to me as though they would be separate, because we have no way of knowing. I guess what I'm hearing is we have no way of knowing how much we're paying for retiree benefits. We just know we have the money for it.
Self-insured.
Yeah. I mean, we could split it out if we need to. There's not been that concern.
What would it take to split it out?
They have to change
our
reporting from mid-cost. Well, then we have to put in a separate fund. And I didn't think we wanted to start forming on that money.
I mean, if we do that, then we probably need to start drawing on money, too. We're going to go ahead and separate them out from the rest of the employees. That's why we kept them all lumped together.
Let's press on. It just seems confusing, quite frankly. I mean, I know we have to set aside money to guarantee our employees that there's going to be health benefit money there. And I'm not sure that we're, I mean, I don't even know how much we're paying now. And we seem to disagree with the actuary on how much we're supposed to pay. And we could be right, they could be right. If we're right, it's wonderful. If they're right, it's terrible, because we'll be severely underfunded.
And again, you're not required to set the money aside.
That's not my understanding.
It's a good practice.
That's not my understanding.
But it's a year
to
year thing. It's a
weekly
thing.
We're not required to set aside.
Just like one of the other GASB said, we should go ahead and set aside money for repair of roads. And we added that up, and that was going to be millions of dollars every year. And so we record it every year. And then we just go ahead and research the role if that's necessary.
So, last question. Have we recorded the liability, our GASB 45 liability yet?
Yes, and that's what I was trying to look for in here. So, it is. It's been.
And like the mayor said, we're one of the very, very few cities that even set money aside.
I think a key issue here is self-insured. And that makes a whole lot of difference compared to not self-insured. Then you're paying an insurance premium on it, and but I think if you check on that, the rules are a little bit different. I know my former employee, they used to be very conservative. Now they're going the other way, and our funding is underfunded versus overfunded. So, but it does, the self-insured has a little different criteria than the insured there. My rate's gone up, so I can keep up with that.
Well, it seems to me, at any point in time here, if we see that we're going to have more retirees than we thought, and maybe you don't know, but you know, you get a feel. You said earlier, Roger, you've got a feel for how many people are retiring.
Oh,
two or three a year, maybe.
Mayor, you've been here for 20-some years, and at the Christmas luncheon, how many people have come up get the watches? Two, three, four?
Yeah. But I'm thinking that you could jump on this thing at a time when you saw that, hey, we do need more money.
Oh, we could always increase
on
it.
On a year-to-year basis. We could increase it a little bit each year and then build it up if we saw a whole group coming at the same time. So, could we not?
Oh, we can, but yeah. Based on what the actuarial said, based on what the auditors said, they were telling us to be cautious on how much we put aside.
Yeah. I have a question on the self-insured versus paying premiums. You have a low threat level, so to speak. Self-insured is okay, but all of us, as we're sitting here, we're getting older, so it's our workforce.
even though we're only retiring 3 or 4 people a year, I envision within 10 years that number is going to grow tremendously. It's just going to be a lot more retired. Wouldn't we be better off financially if we actually had a paid-for policy instead of trying to do self-insurance?
And I guess I don't quite understand the question, Steve.
Basically, who's our carrier?
We're with this other municipalities as the kind of an umbrella with all of them, and we have a catastrophic. If there's a case that's over X amount of dollars, then we're in a pool with that. For the large claims.
Okay, I'm confused. My understanding was that if you actually had a carrier instead of dealing in with municipalities, the costs would be more predictable. I mean, even though they're going to be going up, the costs would be more predictable than in going self-insured. Because if you're self-insured, you really don't know what your risks are. You know, all of a sudden they could skyrocket. Having a carrier would insulate you from that immediate risk.
Well, up to $80,000 for self-insured, but once we get over it, and we have had three claims this year. Over $80,000. So we do get money back from a subrogation where if our claims go to $100,000, we get $20,000 back from the reinsurance policy that South Carolina Local Insurance Group, which is MedCost, is the one who actually administers that program for us. But, you know, somebody just has a $100, $300 doctor bill, then the employee pays their portion, the city pays our portion, and it's taken care of.
If we were in the pool with other cities, then they set the rates that each one pays. And our costs are really similar to what the rest of the pool is at. We make adjustments as is necessary based on the pool.
Across the state, I would say this is in the tens of thousands of those volumes. You're in the state pool too, if I'm not mistaken, right?
No, we are not in the state pool.
So you have a separate pool for cities. It's got to be multi-thousand. In the case, the one I'm in is about 65,000 people that's self-insured, and they figure up the cost and divide it into it at the end of the year.
You've been self-insured since I was considered.
Yeah, self-insured is the proper way to go for it, without a doubt. Trust me, Steve, it's cheaper than an insurance policy.
Okay, but it's more predictable than the opposite.
If your base is large enough, then your statistics will tell you that it's not. Now, that's why I didn't know what their base. In the case of the corporate world, it's usually about 1,000 or 2,000 people is where the pool starts, and it gets cheaper there in that range, depending on what kind of business you're
in. And we're in a pool with tens of thousands of other ones on a cap.
Okay. I don't want to hold it.
And that's where you get your leveraging capability. Otherwise, you pay campers 10 or 12% a year.
The budget's based on the fact that we did want to go ahead and achieve the different goals you had. If you look at the very beginning portion and the page 3, the 3 little I's there down below, this gives a comparison between the various years as to what our budget was in the general fund, utility fund, without the depreciation. And the reason we don't put depreciation in is, like this year, we have $500,000 more in expenditures on capital equipment than we did last year. And otherwise, it just goes up and down. But when I looked at last year compared to this year, we're up $317,000, about 1.5% higher. And the reason we're up $317,000 is $188,000 of that is the grant that we got on the 4 police officers, which we didn't have last year. We are getting in about $185,000, or we're having to spend about $185,000 more. If you look, I'll just show you that page. If you turn to page 43 in your book, and you go down about a third of the way, it's a state treasured alcohol fines. Okay, that's every fine that's written, every ticket that's written, over half the amount of money goes to the state. And the state uses that in a variety of ways to help pay for the jails, help pay for alcohol programs, other drug programs. Last year we had $600,000, next year we got $785,000, so that's $185,000 more in expenditures than we have this year. Well, those two alone add up to over the difference between two budgets. And then if I look at insurance costs,
let me go back to that. How firm is that $285,000? Is that based on what the budget was passed last week? Or are you just assuming that these weren't affected by the budget last week?
$285,000.
Well, you said last week for the state treasurer alcohol fines, last year we got $185,000. Next year you're budgeting for $785,000.
That's correct.
Was that in any way affected with the budget the state passed last week?
No, these are fines and forfeitures that we would be writing. There's a formula as to how much of every ticket goes to the state, how much of it keeps here.
So that's within our control, so that's
a good number. Okay. Well, it's within the number of traffic stops that are made.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
So that would be firm. That has nothing to do with the state cutbacks or anything else.
Okay.
Then if I looked at utilities, same thing. There's about a $360,000 difference between last year and this year. $80,000 of that is three new employees that we're adding for the sewer rotting program that we feel we needed. As I said, last year we did not set aside money for depreciation for vehicles and equipment. $215,000, that's vehicle and equipment. The PSA, the Public Service Authority, the Aiken County, $100,000 more in there. So again, quickly, I could show you how each one of those would increase and why. If you go to the next page, just again some highlights under major losses and gains. I've already mentioned the fact that in the last couple of years we're down about $150,000 because of building permits, business license about $240,000 down. Local funds from the state, as Dick was just mentioning, we are down about $240,000, probably about 25%. We're losing this year the highway safety grant of $100,000. The county is dropping the amount. We had an agreement back in the mid-80s that there's duplication of service, so they would pay us for some of that duplication. Last year they dropped us, and so that'll continue this year, and that'll be $65,000 approximately. And we diverted the rent that we're getting from the utility building. Since we now have our own offices on Kershaw Street, a number of you were in that building in the past, there's no reason we should be charging utilities rent for the building that they were in that was built using general fund money. So that money was taken out of the general fund budget. Some of the gains, though, as I mentioned, was the property taxes, police fine, community policing grant, solid waste has gone up. The next page is some of the other major areas that are impacting our budget. We're paying about $40,000 a year for the consultant who helps us on the traffic engineering, that's Roger Dyer. We're probably about $40,000 away from hiring our own person. We'd probably pay about $60,000 or more a year to have a PE on staff doing traffic engineering. This year we have 13 new police cars in the budget. Last year we didn't really have any because, again, they were trying to cut back on capital. But we have 13 of those. The self-contained breathing apparatus, that's 25 of them. That's $6,000 each. That's the backpacks that they carry when they go into a burning building. We have about 75 of those apparatuses. Each one of the police officers carries an apparatus in the back of their vehicle. That's why we have so many of them. So, because all the public safety officers are dual policemen and firemen. So when they get the scene, they have the backpack and they can go into that fire with it. These are becoming out of date, and so we're starting the replacement of these. And so we're hoping 25 this year, 25 next year, 25 the following year. Solid waste equipment, this is not commercial vehicles. Primarily, this is a grabber that we have two of them right now. We're phasing out what we call the tinks. Those are that scissor grabber used to dig up the dirt. And the other one is a vertical straight down, like you'd see in the little game.
It's pretty hefty. It works very well.
And so we're replacing that. And once we replace in this year's budget, then we'll get rid of most, if not all, the tanks. We'll probably have those as a spare case one breaks down, but they would not be used on a day-to-day basis. $125,000, another new piece of equipment. This is an aerial lift truck in buildings and grounds for tree trimming, tree work. The other one, I believe, is like 20 years old there. So it's longer to replace. Rye patch, the stables, if you go out there, you'll see a lot of rotting wood on that on the stables. Now that we have rye patch completely finished, we're going to go ahead and work on rye patch stables, and then we're going to go to the dollhouse. And we also are going to be doing brickwork around the old foundation of the house that's out there. A lot of weddings and other things happen up there. It's very uneven, and the basins are leaking quite a bit. So we don't, frankly, we don't know how much it's going to cost us. We'll be doing most of the work ourselves, but we do know most of that brick up there will be replaced. We already talked about the post-retirement health benefits that are in there. As I said, that we've increased the capital by almost $500,000 between the past year and this year. Camera system, in next year's budget, we have some money in this year's budget, another $80,000 for the camera system to Odell Weeks and Smith Hazel. And then street lighting. They've raised the street lighting costs per light up dramatically over the last few years, and the number of street lights that we've been installing has gone up dramatically. So just making a comparison between the last couple of years, it's gone up $125,000. Quite expensive for street lights, a lot more than what you'd think.
What's the increased capital, $490,000?
That's the capital that we spent in 09, 10, versus what we're spending next year in 2010, 2011. We're spending about $500,000 more in capital.
Which just in general, all the specifics are in the budget. And the camera system, $80,000, and that's not going to pay for all of it? Or?
Well, part of it's in this year's budget, part of it's in next year's budget.
You get a price yet, Glenn, on that camera?
Yeah, those are going out to bid this week or next week, the camera system.
We have a pretty good offer, so we have the next.
We have the next.
And how many cameras are we talking about?
The Week Center alone, I think there's around 20. We haven't developed the specs for Smith Hazel yet.
Seems high.
In this year's budget, as there's no fee increases, whether it be for taxes or anything else, you know, we took care of that with the water and sewer increase that you had at the last meeting. So taxes haven't gone up. We decided not to have a garbage fee increase this year. The other fee increases we've had in previous years were stormwater, fire fees, and none of that's going up. So we talked about the positions that were frozen, and there is a 1% cost of living increase in this year's budget. Now, I did put in here that part of that's dependent on this year-end funding. If we find out that at the end of the year, fiscal year, June 30th, that we got a deficit or something else, then we'll forestall the 1% increase. But 1% increase is about $140,000.
Didn't we increase the commercial pickup?
Yes, that's already been done, and that's why I did not put it in. I can answer any questions you may have on the rest of it, but you know, we've covered a lot of this in here. If you could turn to, unless there's questions, the next page I'm going to talk about is all other funds.
I got a quick comment.
Sure.
It's not that important, but your wide scale on your graphs is millions of dollars, and that would mean we make $31 trillion in revenue. good friend.
You thought that was a water phones or something? Thank you. We've been doing this for years. Under all other funds, we're going to go into this a little bit more in depth, but again, these are the funds that are not the general funds, not the water and sewer funds. Some of the major things, for instance, in these capital, the loss funds, the local option sales tax, some of the things that we're looking at, there's several water and sewer projects that are going to be underway this year. We will be getting the mobile bleachers. Again, these are things that were passed in the referendum in 2004. Mobile bleachers, those are the ones that behind a large pickup truck, you could roll bleachers that'll fit a couple hundred people from site to site. So if it's a soccer game somewhere, or football game, or baseball, you could put up these portable bleachers. Landfill cap, we've been working on that for the last year and a half. An environmental firm called Schnabel has gone out to our landfill, has done a phase one and a phase two study. They've actually put probes in the ground and dug in the ground, taken core sample, try to analyze how much of the landfill gas needed to be taken care of. And they're figuring that it would be around $33,000 per acre to get the cap on it that's necessary. So it could then be used. And then depending on what gas is and how we want to get rid of it, there's a couple different systems that could be a couple hundred thousand dollars to collect the gas by gravity flow, and then there's another way that you could go ahead and actually have pumping to suck it all to one area. None of the gas is pure enough. It's a methane gas is pure enough that can be used in some kind of commercial operation or other type of operation. It would have to be vetted in some fashion or other. But there is money in the budget to go ahead and do the landfill cap and then to go ahead and do some kind of methane collection. So that we hope to get started on that process this next year. The landfill, just for those that are new to the council, was closed in the late 80s. So this is not like a landfill that's been active recently. It's been over 20 years, but we'll go ahead and take care of that. And then council will need to decide what, if anything, we want to do from a recreational standpoint at the landfill. So we're talking about from golf to BMX biking to walking trails to more of a passive, just grass out there. You can't put a lot of trees on there because then you break the cap that you're putting on top of the landfill. And what you're trying to do is cap it so moisture and other things will not get in there and cause a problem with the garbage that's down below.
Roger, now, this will be considered, when we get through with this, a brown site that we could have with the recreation type things on top of it, but no buildings, right?
That's
correct. The $30,000 will put it in that stage for use
as
a brown site.
Unless we had the building up on poles.
Right, it's got to be vented under anything you fixture.
Renaissance Park up in Charlotte, some of you may have heard of Renaissance Park, but it's real close to the airport. That's on a landfill. I think the only incident I've ever heard was when a person was smoking, looked at the ball, and threw their cigarette down the valley area, and it blew up. Only kidding.
Other than that, all right.
Other than that, go travel.
It's a tennis service.
The airport funding, we should have by next late winter, early spring, at least two-thirds of the ILS system in there. We're still working through the process.
And Larry, you give us a quick update on that.
At a meeting with the Parks President, who is the out of Atlanta ADO, last week, and they have they're working with us to get the airport layout plan, the ALP, they talk in acronyms, updated. We get $150,000 per year grant from the FAA on that. And it's really important to get that updated so that the glide slope in the ILS can be finished. So we're starting that process this year. They're funding 95% of that. The state's funding 2.5%. All we have to pay is 2.5%, about $300,000 total. So we pay 2.5% of that. Once that is, that's going to be going forward with the glide slope design. So real good meeting. We got quite a bit out of it last week with them. So moving ahead.
They've been screwing with this project now for 3 years. Is it ever going to get done? I mean, really, right?
The DMV and localizer will be in. We'll break ground in June, is what I've been promised. And the fellow that promised me that is the project director, Al Soriski, if I'm pronouncing that properly. He's out of Boston area, up in New England area. What he tells me, we have no problem being contacted by their contractor and should have their control building, power building in by the end of this month and actually in Storage Airport. So we will break ground on those. The glide slope, we could have it designed and in the ground, except they will not do that. They have told us repeatedly that they do not have time in their schedule to actually get the thing flown and certified until after Masters of 2011. So sometime late 2011, they'll fly it and certify it.
We need to send a letter to somebody, Washington, Graham, or Dement. I mean, this is just disgusting. We're losing money on this airport. We've got people that would love to come in and land on that sucker at every Masters, and these guys have been putting out. I've only been on the council for 3 years, but it was going to be the year after I came on the council.
We had to send them 2 weeks ago, I believe, a check for $138,000, $136,000. That represented their fee to us to review our plans and have an inspector on site for the glide slope where they would not take it and would not certify it.
It's
kind of, we'll do it for you, but they got us right there.
Let me elaborate a little bit on that. A lot of companies value their assets like their jets, and they have restrictions on where they can land. They have to have like a minimum of 5,000 feet of runway. It's got to be a clean surface, and it has to have an IMS. It doesn't make any difference. The facility out there is beautiful. I'm a new aircraft owner, so I'm very familiar with it. But the rules are rules. They're not going to allow their corporate jets to come in here. It's not just the Masters. I mean, it's you go out there anytime. You've got three or four big elaborate jets sitting out there, and that number could be doubled. And one of the things we have to remember, every time a jet lands, has to take on a lot of fuel, and we make money on that lot of fuel.
Absolutely.
And that's money that we're actually missing out on, if you will. The little putt-putts, like the 182s, 172s, 50, 80 gallons or nothing. These guys take 300-400 gallons, right off the bat.
I don't know what the answer is. I was sitting
on a couple of those meetings, and Larry, you're a little bit more optimistic than I am about FAA.
We've been fighting this battle really since before 1996.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
We started about 94.
We're just fighting the bureaucracy here. And Steve, that anybody that flies knows it. And different organizations have a piece of this, the state, the federal, and what have you. We've had all kinds of folks going up. I've been up. Everybody's been up. We've had state senators. We've had all kinds of folks helping us, trying to help our senators. So, and we're still trying. And we just keep fighting on this thing, and that's the only way to get it. And who knows when we're going to get it. If we get it in a couple of years, we may be lucky. I don't know.
We keep hitting them. We keep getting some movement out of them. And you're right, Councilman. The commercial, the large commercial folks, they have very strict requirements, and FAA knows that. And unless FAA certifies the glide slope, the commercial people will not use it. So they got us. They know they got us.
When's the last time we sent anything to Graham or Dement or senators?
I haven't sent anything to them for quite a while because I've been getting movement from the people
Oh, you've been down here and came down with them. When was the big meeting?
I don't know how you define movement, Larry, but it's still not going to be until after 2011. And they said at one time, 2009, didn't they?
Well, again, we've been fighting this for many, many, many years. And when I get a 90% set of plans in and immediately reject them and get a phone call 2 days later from the FAA and the guy said, I don't know why you even got these. They're incorrect. And he promised to call me back with the changes that were needed. And he called me back within 2 days, and we have those changes and move forward. So we're getting cooperation, I guess, in their eyes as well as they can. But to push it any faster, I'm like the mayor. I don't know how we could push it faster. We have had Graham and the others work on it. And when we pushed the last time, we sent them the request for $1.3 million to get the glide slope. And we had our representatives and senators working on that for us. Well, they gave us $995,000, which automatically cut our glide slope out. So we get the, what they call the DME, and that's distance measuring something. I don't know what the E stands for. And a localizer array, which is the antennas for the thing, but no glide slope. So it was useless. And it was kind of like, okay, you can push us all you want. We'll put it in there for you. Oh, by the way, there's not quite enough money to do this. And where the money goes is to their fees.
Well, it's the only one that's going to win is the FAA. I mean, it's just frustrating because the city spent a lot of money for that airport. And,
very frustrating.
And it's just it's hurting us financially.
Yeah, very frustrating.
I mean, we could be making a lot of money in that airport. And now you're saying after the 2011 Masters, and I won't be shocked if it doesn't turn out to be after the 2012 this time next year.
We will ask Senator Graham to get back involved.
And we have. I've been in contact with his office as recently as a month ago.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot, because what FAA is saying is with all the extra stimulus money, they're on all these other projects. I mean, they give all the right excuses.
Yeah, I understand that. We've been getting that for a long time. And, I mean, Dick's right. And, but Dick, it is moving. I know it's not what any of us want. but boy, going back to 96, and I think there were some folks involved even before that, it's moved a little bit.
And we even told them the meeting was what, last fall we had the big meeting? We'd pay for things, we'd get our consultant to move faster, and so.
Okay. Well, would it hurt, would it hurt to send out another round of letters to Barrett, to Graham, and to Mint?
I don't think it would hurt unless it made FAA. If it upsets them more, and they may drag their feet a little bit more, or they might say, hey, these guys, you know.
One of the concerns from last time I contacted the senator's office was, we could talk to them, but you might get pushed further down the list.
That's what I do,
Fred. That's wonderful.
I mean,
it's a wonderful response.
I see it as a Democratic Congress now.
Well, till November. Okay.
All righty. On that good news, why don't you turn to page 6? I'm going to actually end the budget, unless there's questions in the panel.
Before we go into that, I think the letter that I guess Kim put a lot of it together that was attached to our agenda about the business license fees, and eventually you're going to get that about halfway through the budget. Do you want to go over that piece of paper first? Or hit it when you get to the
policy. I was going to hit it when I got the business license.
Okay. Let me just jump ahead of that.
We heard at last council meeting indications from the business community that they'd like us to do something about the business license tax. It's a proverbial question. We don't want to pay it. And the council's proverbial response is fine. You don't pay it, but where are we going to get the money to compensate for that? And I think I've been asked to reserve room 204 on Thursday at 8 o'clock. Some of the business people are coming in, for any of the council members that want to come. And I guess if we get a commitment of more than four, then we have to do some kind of posting. Is there any likelihood, does the council, as a council, want to take a look at reducing items in this budget that would allow us to address some reductions in the business license program?
I think we need to talk about the business license itself first. And let's get a good feel for how much we're really talking about.
Okay.
We've talked about $2 million. It's not $2 million, it's $8
million. Yes, I agree.
You do away with that, and boy, more than half of that is outside the city. And who's going to make up that money? How are you going to make up that money? We're already talking about a tight budget. Everyone needs to, and I mean everyone who's part of this discussion, needs to understand the facts, not the emotional ideas and what have you, but the fact, and then sit down and talk about it and see if there is anything that we can do. Fine. I think we all would agree we'd love to get rid of the tax. That's fine. It's good to say that. And it's true. I think we all would. But how can it be done? We're talking about $8 million. You just don't replace what's in the city. You replace the insurance companies, the cable companies, you name it. Everybody's paying a fee. That's what we've got. And that's what is in the letter that we all got, and that's what Roger wanted to talk about.
Okay.
If council wants to talk about that now before he has a chance to review it with everyone, that's something. I guess it's up on the wall.
We can do it now.
I was thinking. I have a question that's not related to the business license tax, believe it or not, but the meeting that the Aiken Business Alliance wants to have is not just about the business license tax. And I'm not even a spokesperson for that. That's Katie Lipscomb. Katie wants to start a discussion with business owners on all sorts of issues that impact businesses. Not just, the business license tax burns me up. This is Katie Lipscomb, and it's not just that. It's other things. And she wants to have either quarterly or whatever moving forward now discussions with city council from business owners. Fine. And this is a group who, for whatever reason, has broken away from the chamber. Okay? So they want to have a presence in front of their city council folks. And that's what it's about. There's all sorts of issues. Katie wants to talk about shop local and business license. And she wants this to be the first of an ongoing trend to talk about issues. So Thursday's not just about business license. So I don't want people to make their decision on what they're going to do Thursday based on this. This is, do you want to sit down and start talking with business owners in your community about issues, all of them that impact them? And that's what I'm going to be there, and this is Katie Lipscomb. Yep. And her group.
You know we're always open to talk to people. We do it all the time.
Right.
We say that all the time. We've never turned anybody away at city council or anything else. So the answer would be yes, certainly.
Well, that's why Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, if anyone can be present, Katie is going to
have a lot of schedules. I don't know who's available at that time. You know, people make schedules ahead.
Well, sure.
I know I'm packed this week myself. So.
Well, Dick and Reggie can be there. I've called them, and anyone else who can come would be great. And if you can't come,
You can have four. You just have to post
it. If you have four, you have to post it, and there's a week posting?
No. 24 hours, is it?
Is it 20?
It's 24 hours.
What is it, Sarah?
24 now?
24. Okay.
If we're going to do it, let's do it right. I mean, let's don't have an we show up and we have to adjourn it.
Oh, no. That's right. That's right.
Well, that's why I raised it now. I just wanted
to clarify that. I don't want people to think it's just a business license tax issue and here comes Didi again. This is the Aiken Business Alliance, of which I'm a member, led by Katie Lipscomb. And so that was that. And then I do have one question before we move on to business or wherever you guys are going, and it's not about business license fees, and it might be for Roger, and it might be for Kim. But my question is, I've been trying to get my hands around how many dollars actually the city of Aiken spends each year with TIF, accommodation tax, other fund, general fund, lost, state and federal grants, DOE money for lights. Can I ever get that information? I can't quite figure out how much is spent here in the city of Aiken total.
It's listed here in the budget.
I know we have a 26. Whatever the general fund is in the other, I'm talking about all lost, comic, everything. Come on, grant money.
It's in here.
Well, I don't have that.
Page four.
Okay. Grant money, DOE money on the downtown traffic lights, everything.
We say downtown traffic lights.
That was for the city of Aiken. It was DOE money. So I would like to know how many tax dollars are spent to keep the city of Aiken moving.
Okay, are you talking about money that we don't receive but the state spends?
In the city of Aiken.
The traffic lights, the $300,000.
How much money it takes to get keep the city of Aiken moving from all various forms of monies coming in to the city of Aiken.
Okay, Kim's question she just mentioned was, are you talking about the 300 and some?
That's part of it. Any money spent.
That was not city money. That was not city money.
Correct.
I can tell you how much the city spends every year. I can't tell you how much the state, DHEC, and all the others spend.
So we don't have any means of getting our hands around how much money it costs to keep the city of Aiken going.
Well, those organizations know what they're spending and where they're
spending. But you guys don't. And they come into our city and spend money, but y'all don't really know how much they spend.
How are we supposed to know that, Dee? They're out here working
on
the road.
That's why I'm asking. I can't find it. This isn't an accusation. I'm
trying
to
get my hands
around what it costs to keep the city going.
Have you asked? We're not paying it. Have you asked DOT?
I'm going to, but I wanted to know just here. I mean, because they're coming into our city if ever that conversation takes place. Do you guys understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, but it's a little confusing because when you're asking how much does it cost to run the city, that's our budget. That's what we spend to run the city. And so the fact that DOT is going to come in and spend some money, or organization is going to come in and spend some money, I don't know that I would say that that's needed to run the city. I mean, what's needed to run the city is in this document that we're going to review and ultimately approve. It includes the penny sales tax. It includes the grants. It includes the miscellaneous, the victims' funds, and so forth, and it's all here.
Federal and state grants, all that. So everything but DOT. So when DOT comes in or someone comes in to train, you guys, that's not a conversation.
It's not
you
a
really
city.
Know how much money they're going to be spending.
The city portion of that expense, for example, let's say somebody, as I understand it, if somebody came in and they were going to train public safety, and it's a state agency, and they're going to pick up the fee, and I think we do some things to reduce the fee even on their side. The only fee to us would be our employees in a training category as opposed to another category, but we would never put in the budget how much.
Well, I didn't think you put it in the budget. I just wondered if you did. Do you know?
I don't even know. I wouldn't think we need. No, it wouldn't.
Maybe. Well, as a taxpayer, I want to know how many tax dollars it takes to keep the city going. I mean, maybe you can't provide it. Maybe I have to go find another.
Well, that's why we're miscommunicating, because when you say to keep the city going, we don't need some of that stuff to keep us going.
But anyway, it's not meant to put you on the spot. I mean, I honestly just am trying to get my hands around how much money it costs to keep a municipality moving. And part of it, City of Aiken pays for. I realize that part of it's paid by the state. Part of it's just, but I'm just trying to find out if there's any one place, or if that's going to be years of research on my part to figure out how much it takes to keep the City of Aiken moving.
And well, there'd be Aiken County. We have some funds.
Okay.
The landfill costs, EMS services, jail.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that are associated with the city.
That's what I mean. But there's no one source. We have actually no real concept of how much money it takes to keep the city of Aiken moving.
Now, wait a minute. Whoa. Let's get back to the definition here.
It's right here.
We're sitting down talking about this. Roger can tell you what the city is spending. He told everybody this. What page is it, Roger?
Page four.
I think we're talking about apples and oranges. But I understand what the city of Aiken is spending.
DOT ought to be able to tell you how much they spend in a year in any city.
Probably not inside the city.
So.
No, maybe.
The answer is, this isn't ugly to you, I promise you, I'm trying to just,
if you want
from
the
my
answer,
own information, want to know how much money it takes to run the city of Aiken.
If you want the answer from every state, federal agency that spends money in or for Aiken, no. I don't think anybody's going to have that number.
And a lot of our dollars that we have here is being spent for residents not in the city. We're providing water, providing sewer outside of the city, and airports outside of the city. So, again, our protection. Of the $46 million or $47 million, maybe 20-30% of that's outside the city.
And this isn't again, that's relatively scary that we have no true concept as a taxpayer for Main Street. And that's not a reflection on you guys. It scares me to death that we have no idea.
Okay. First of all, on the Thursday meeting, unless council is sponsoring that meeting, we just don't open up our rooms to outside groups unless there's someone to sponsor. So, I mean, if council wants to sponsor that meeting, otherwise people pay to go ahead and rent our rooms.
I would have liked to have known earlier. I've got something committed on that morning.
You know, then the other question is, do you invite the chamber, you invite other businesses, or just listen to one group? How do you want to handle this?
I have no problem with you know, I've met with several people over the years, just not a big, huge group by any means, but three or four people at a time.
When ABA was formed up back in the early to mid-90s and then went out of existence, I guess they're back up again, they had their own separate organization. Again, the organization, if they want to use our facility, either we have to be a co-sponsor to have them use our facility, or they have to pay to use this facility.
Well, I've asked to reserve the room now. Does that mean that I need three more people to agree that we can use the room?
I would say yes.
Gosh, that's terrible.
Why?
I mean, a council member wants to use a room at City Hall, and we've got to make a motion to get it approved.
If you want to meet with a small group of folks, we'll provide you a room to do that.
But I can't tell you how many people are going to be there. I don't know.
But if an organization wants to have a quarterly meeting, then, again, every group that's come to me in the past and wanted to use our facility.
But this is not a meeting for them, per se. This is a meeting with council members who want to attend. So it's not a meeting just for their own organization that we're not invited. Essentially, they have asked to meet with council. I would think we would do that for any group of citizens.
And again, are we going to advertise this will be for all small businesses or only with ABE?
It's the people that asked us. I don't know what it's called. The Aiken Business Alliance? Is that what it's called, Dee?
We'll find our own place. I know this was built with our tax dollars, but we'll find our own place.
Well, again, it's up to council. However you want to do that. Just tell you what the policy has been in the past.
Roger, if it's an organized meeting like you say, that's different, I think. If a council member wants to meet with a few people, I don't see a problem. The problem could be, you open it up to whatever that you, at some point we might want to say no because it's not what we want to happen in this building.
Or there's places where they can rent the place.
Yeah.
But I know like the NAACP and groups like that coming in and said, we'd like to use your facility, come to this meeting.
And I've been told that
Leslie's wanted to on many occasions, and I've told her no. I just want to be consistent.
Well,
okay, so what we're saying then is that, and I guess it comes back down to a question that was addressed last Monday when the business community expressed an interest in meeting with council to discuss common subjects. So I guess our response is no thanks. Let us know when you get a place to meet.
I don't think that's fair because I want to meet with them, but you give me on Monday, you tell me you want to meet Thursday at 8 o'clock. And that's impossible for me to do, as much as I would like to meet and talk with them. I asked for the meeting at Monday night's meeting. It was I who asked to meet with them. And no one has communicated to me that they wanted to meet Thursday. Well, I would have made arrangements to be available Thursday morning. But I'm just listening to the discussion, and I think what I'm hearing is that Roger's trying to apply one set of rules to all organizations for use of the building, and I think he pretty much has to do that. But I have no problems in meeting with them with sufficient time for me to arrange my schedule to do that. I would love to meet with them, but 8 o'clock in the morning is not going to suit me at all.
No, I'm saying vote. I have no problem. We opened it up at the meeting.
But if four of them want to go, you know, I'll vote for you to go to do that if that's what you want. But I just know that I can't be there, and I want to be there.
Yeah. And the 8 o'clock is the best time for them.
I know they want to have a meeting, but I mean, exactly what would be on the agenda is what really concerns me. I mean, it's nice to all sit around in a room and, you know, shoot the breeze and, you know, reduce this, increase this, and what have you. But I mean, I'd really like to have a point A, B, C, D. These are the items we're going to discuss. And that way we know when it's in, you know, it's like when, when the old primitive man know his crop was in. You got to have a point to cut off the meeting. We could be here for 10 hours with all the issues between the business community, you know, taxes and some of the things they feel to figure out. Not working in that way. I mean, you know, if you go, no, I'm willing to go with you. But I would like to get a definite agenda. These are the topics that we'd like to discuss. Originally, you and I chatted earlier, I thought it was just the business license fees. But then, you know, it's from Gidi, it sounds like there's a lot more issues that are...
I didn't realize there are other issues as well.
Yeah.
Why don't we organize this information gathering session, let Mr. Mayor work on it. Is it important to do it this Thursday, or can we do it next week?
You'll have to contact Katie Lipscomb. She is the president of the organization, and she was just following up as she was told. She wasn't told she had to have an agenda. She wasn't told she had to have a time frame. She's just trying to start the conversation.
Okay.
And we will be happy to find another place that we don't have already paid for with our tax dollars.
We'll find a way to work this out.
I'll communicate
with her also, but I think if you're asking for a meeting of whatever business people's in that, I think all of them would like to know where they're coming from, and I don't think asking for agenda would be too much, and I'll communicate personally with her between now and Thursday.
I do think a council member ought to be able to reserve room 204, but let's press on.
Well, I think the majority of us, I started out with saying that I have no problems or objections, but letting you know on a Monday afternoon where my agenda is set for Thursday morning, especially, doesn't give me time to shift some things around.
It's going to be a time challenge no matter when they want to meet, obviously, so we'll work it out.
If you want to meet with a group of folks, we can always set that up. That's not what I was hearing yet. This group wants to meet on a regular basis.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how often they want to meet. I honestly don't. I was asked to set up a meeting Thursday morning at 8 o'clock to meet with some local business people, and I thought that would not be a problem, and I hope I didn't get any of the ladies in trouble by reserving the room. That's to me, it's no different than meeting with a constituency. You know, if the folks want to meet, I don't know what they want to talk about, but... if they've got some issues, we're not going to get them addressed until we meet and figure out what they are. I know one of the issues. We all know one of the issues. They don't like the business license tax, but I don't know what some of the other issues are. So that's all I was trying to do.
But it's always good to know, to have some kind of idea what you're meeting about. I agree with Steve. Every time I meet with somebody or someone wants to meet with me,
because it can save time.
I said, can you tell me, please, what the subject is so that I could be better prepared?
It saves time, you know? Yeah.
Certainly. That's just good business.
Adding to what you've said, it allows the staff to have information and even questions are asked rather than being stumped with no response at all.
Right. If you talk to Katie, could we plan this for maybe sometime next week in the morning?
Sure.
or the week after, or give us a couple of dates? I suspect most of us would want to be there.
I'll work it. The only thing is, from their perspective, they, and Don can probably appreciate this, they just soon meet earlier in the morning, so as they've got businesses to run.
Well, that's right.
And that conflicts with a couple of the council members, I suspect, that are working, three of you.
Well, it may not if we know ahead of time to reschedule.
Yep.
Are you still teaching?
I'm not. I'm babysitting in Columbia.
Right.
I think part of the issue was that, you know, the business community came before the city council last Monday, and maybe we should have determined who was supposed to call him, but I know that they waited for quite a while for some of the city council folks to express an interest in reaching out to the business community to reach out. So today's Monday, it's 1 week later, so we decided to take the ball in our own hands and reach out. I had breakfast with Katie, and she is going to create an agenda. She just wanted to make sure that this will go into effect, this new budget, July 1st, that we meet sooner than later so that you guys have time to think about some things. The longer we push it out, the closer we get to this budget going through without input, at least giving input, because if not, you're going to get very fired up. You think I'm mad? I'm the one who could actually sit here today. Okay? Right. So just, there's going to be some of it's good stuff. Some of it's shop local. I mean, I know one of Katie's issues when you talk to her, she's going to want to know. I mean, do you bid out for your office supplies? Because Ms. Holly certainly doesn't ever get a bid at Aiken Office Supply. There are going to be all sorts of those sort, but Katie's the one to come up with it. But she took the ball. She, today, put the foot first because she had not heard from any of her city council folks who expressed an interest in meeting with the business community.
So did you not say she contacted you?
No, I spoke to Dee.
So Dee contacted you.
But I knew his cell phone number as I sat there with Katie at breakfast. So I called Dick Duar this morning.
We have two public hearings at least, and perhaps another one of these work sessions, I don't know, but a minimum two public hearings before the budget's passed.
Right. Well, 3 o'clock doesn't work well for business owners.
Understand.
So 8 a.m. before they get to their wherever and after they drop their kids off, yep, works well. You know, so that's... And I think you said from 8 to 10. I don't think most of them even have 2 hours. Steve, I don't think most business owners have 10 hours to sit with you. We got to go make money so we can pay our taxes.
8 o'clock is no problem, I don't think. I think it's the timing here. At least 3 of us couldn't be there. I don't know about the other.
We'll get a result.
Mr. Mayor, normally when we have a group that wants to meet with us, the city manager sets those meetings up, even if it's a work session before a regular council meeting and we meet with groups who want to meet with us. Mm-hmm. I would like, and when I mentioned it Monday night, I just automatically assumed that most of you were in agreement with that and that we could get you to set that up as one of our work sessions prior to passing the budget in June. I just thought that we had a little bit more time. I didn't know it had to be right away. But if they could wait, we could get you to set up a work session and all of us could be present.
And typically we'll sit there at a council meeting and we'll look at the calendars. Because we've had several meetings at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, that's all they're asking.
It's not unusual.
And I think we should respond.
I don't want them to go away thinking that we don't want to meet with them. It's just that I think it caught me by surprise.
I don't think anybody should leave with that.
And I didn't really think that...
Well, I'm speaking for Katie and the group, and so that's where it is. And I think that Betty Weinberger called a few of you as well. That's a date that worked well for her. I think, Roger, you wanted her to work that through the chamber. We have no desire to proceed that way. So this is...
So you just want certain members. You don't want all of us.
We aren't going to be voting on it.
No one called me about a meeting.
I mean, moving forward, I can't speak for Katie. I'm the one of the group. But I think they wanted an avenue to reach out to city council folks. She didn't say she cared if there were 7 or 4. I mean, eventually we'd like to get everyone there, but we hope these types of discussions continue. City council needs to regularly hear from their business owners.
No doubt. We don't disagree with anything you're saying.
If you're 1/3 of the budget, we need to be heard from. And so that is... this is just the start. That doesn't mean you all have to be there or people are going to throw tomatoes at you when they see you on the street if you aren't there. But we have to start somewhere sometime, okay? And Katie is the one who's the water bearer, who's willing to, she's the one reaching out, wanting this to happen. She's just asking to be able to sit down with some of her elected officials and to have a conversation. I'm sure, Steve, she would love to present an agenda. She's working on it today. She asked me for my input. I said, I'll get to you after I leave the meeting. So, I mean, emailing you an agenda, everybody wants to have this worked out. So nobody's looking to throw you a grenade, anyone. I mean, I'm just talking about the issues. Highway Overland District, which I've already dealt with, shop local, you can't shop local. I mean, I guess just in my office. But those are some of the issues that the Business Alliance as a whole want to discuss with you, okay? I know Katie's the spokesperson. I'm just here because she has to work, frankly. And my mother-in-law could pick up my kids today. But this time doesn't work for most business owners. So that's why they aren't here.
Well, now, Katie contacted me. It was today. It was after lunch today. And just briefly mentioned to me the possibility of this meeting on Thursday. And I'm not sure that my schedule will allow me to attend that. And I really would like to be in attendance at this
meeting. Right.
I mean, for a long time, I think that our business community has needed to be vocal with city council and with the leadership within our city, and there needs to be open communications between the two, and I think we've been there, ready to listen, but not many of them have ever come.
Well, we're just now figuring out the check or what's speaking for.
And spoke up.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, I mean, we're here with our arms wide open saying, you know, please. But in doing so, I mean, you know, we've got to have the meeting set far enough in advance that we can change our schedules in order to make that meeting. Or either we're going to be not at present at the meeting and the business community is going to say, well, they're not willing to listen, and that's not true.
I mean, this is all I propose. You can talk to Katie. I propose that those that can be there Thursday be there, and then set a quarterly or whatever you got, whatever Katie and the folks at City Council decide on, a quarterly meeting moving forward, and you can put that on their agendas, and you know where it is each quarter. I think monthly is probably overkill. That, talk to Katie. But a quarterly meeting moving forward, and if we can't meet in our tax-safe City Council buildings, we'll find some place else to meet. I'll close up my office and we can all meet there.
Excuse me, our time is up. We'll be back. I'll call you. Thank you.
You want to say something, Roger?
I do, but it's going to take a little bit longer than we have right now, and the time is up. We'll be back.
Okay.
We have a lot to say.
Okay, Roger.
Since we're on business license.
Let's make a decision. Is the meeting going to be Thursday morning?
Let me just get back. I'll leave there.
All right, I can't be there, but I think that was an open question. Is it going to be Thursday night? You going to talk to Katie?
No, I'll talk to Katie, and I'll email everybody. We'll make an effort to structure a meeting that as many of us can be there as possible, and as many of the businesses can be there as possible. But I'm hearing clearly that from the business perspective, 8 o'clock in the morning is the best time, and we're not talking about 2 hours. I guess we're going to have to get right to it and probably be lucky to get an hour in.
Yeah.
But at least we'll get a sense of what their concerns are and what we they need or want to do about it. So I'll find out a good time. Clearly, this Thursday does not appear to be ideal. I would be willing to meet, and there's a couple of us that would be willing to meet. If y'all want us to do that and get a sense of what's going on, we can do that, whatever.
That's fine. Okay.
Whatever suits the council.
I just don't like meetings before me.
Okay.
I feel like
again, because of time problems, you need an agenda.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you realize that, and I hope next year we start looking at the budget long before the month of April. I hope we start in maybe February or January, because quite frankly, I feel pressured. I mean, there's a lot of things I'd like to go over this budget, a lot of questions and comments I'll probably make, but hey, we're up against it. I mean, we're going to have our first hearing next council meeting, and I mean, to be fair to staff, this thing's got to be passed almost in May, because they've got to get all of their things together to implement the budget, and this is way too late. We really need
to. Well, we did talk about since January.
Well, not with this.
Well, and if that's the case, then we need to start probably in October, November.
That's fine with me.
We can start that if that's what council wants.
Fine with me. I think next year we ought to take a look at the zero-based budgeting and go over it. There's a lot in here. Every time I read one of these budgets, I learn more and more. Mm-hmm. Heck of a document. Well done.
Okay, Roger.
Okay, since we've talked about business license, that seems to be the hot topic, we might as well turn to page 7, which is the license and permit revenue for the city of Macon. And I know that you got a lot of information at your last meeting. Almost all of it had correct numbers, but it's when we look at business license, about $8.1 million of the business license. This shows you in the 2009-2010 budget, and that's your second column down, it lists about $8,200,000. You have to take out your building permits. That's not really part of your licensing, but everything else is the business license. And we've gotten a couple of opinions, and I think everybody basically agrees that the $8.1 million is a business license. So if we ever talk about business license and the reduction, then if we set a 20% reduction on the business license, that would be $1.6 million.
Isn't some of this considered to be franchise and not business license?
According to the attorney that we talked to, Danny Crowe, he looks at all as a business license. Now, it could be questioned, and you could go to court and look at it, and maybe you would win, but he feels that the least, the franchise with the SENG and making like a co-op could be considered maybe not business license. Could be possible. But if we, his concern is if the headlines say business license reduced by 20%, then AT&T, SENG, making like a co-op, everybody would be calling up and saying, well, if you're going to reduce theirs by 20%, then why isn't ours being reduced by 20%? And he feels they would have a valid point in what they're stating. Now, the only way you could resolve that is if it goes into a court issue type of thing. So again, anytime you look at a reduction of 10%, 20%, 50%, we have to look at the 8.1 million. When we looked at the amount of business license, and we took the 50% or more of the individuals of the 4,088 business licenses that we receive, $114 or less is paid each year by half of those. So your typical business license or over 2,040 of them pay $115 or less a year. Only about 10% pay $1,000 per year or more. And I think those are the ones that are the major concern. When we take out the big five, telecommunication, electric, insurance, cable, utilities, it's left with $2,349,000 or 29%. And that is an average of $575.73 per business. So we just wanted to give you kind of a comparison of what we see as the average business license. And if you took 20% of that, you're then talking about $115 reduction. And I'm just using 20% as a number to kind of give you a feeling. And I'm not too sure if that's going to, I mean, I think in principle that's great, but I don't know how much it's going to really help the business by reducing it only $100, $115. When we looked at our business license, and that's the slide that's up here, compared to the rest of the state, we looked at the business license and compared to cities our size. I actually looked at cities around Columbia that were, most of them were much smaller. And the smaller the city, typically the lower the business license. Like we compared to Jackson or New Wellington, their business license are lower on a per thousand rate basis. So we again looked at five different categories here, anything from a general merchandise store, $5 million gross, could be a grocery store, furniture store, typical ones, and 59 out of 60 were lower. We went back to 1938, I think, is when Aiken instituted it. Their minimum business license back then, minimum, was $15, which in today's economy would be $226. As we said, the 50% or more are lower than that. We try to figure out when was the last time we've increased the business license. We went back 30 years, couldn't find it. I imagine with a little more research we could. But these are the cities that we compared ourselves to, which were some a little bit larger, some a little bit smaller. But again, it's a comparison of businesses. Only in one category was in Sumter for contractors, and at one time contractors were one of our lowest ones. And then we put them in an actual class rate. They were in a separate one, and almost doubled the contractor's fees that we had from that. The other problem we have is if we took the business license and looked at it, the vast majority of the businesses that pay us are outside the city. So again, if you lower it by 20%, the ones that get the biggest advantage are the ones outside the city because they're paying double. So they're actually getting even a higher percentage. If you're going to find, and again, this is just my opinion, but if you're trying to find ways to help the smaller businesses, we have to find something that helps the small businesses inside the city, not the businesses that are outside the city. And so, to me, the business license is probably not the way to go.
we even talked about as a staff, said, you know, like, even if you have advertising to shop in Aiken or something that would help the local businesses, if that's what council wants to do. But the business license helps actually more people outside the city than inside. Kim came up with some numbers today, and over $4 million is paid from people outside the city, or businesses outside the city. And 2,380 of the business licenses were outside the city. Somebody also said Greenville, we should compare ourselves to Greenville. They got the incentive. If council, for those that were on it in 2005, when Roy Bates came and changed the system that we're currently on, he's the one that said, that's illegal what you're doing. In other words, he said what Greenville's now doing is illegal and shouldn't be done. Now, we've never recalled on it. We had that in effect since the, I just want to say about 93, 94, where we gave incentive for the first 3 years to businesses, all businesses. We even said if you were a corporate entity and you wanted to come inside the city, we'd give you some breaks and have a minimum fee. And he said that was wrong, and council in 2005 voted that out. What we do instead, the first year, somebody comes in, let's say in January, and wants to start up a business. Well, their fees are going to be $30 to $60. That's the base rate. We don't know what business they're going to have. Well, business, again, is paid on gross revenue. Well, if they came in January, February, March, they don't have gross revenue for the past year because they haven't been in business for a full year. So, again, their second year, they have a reduced amount. But it's really, in many cases, not until the third year that they're at the level based on their gross receipts, because their gross receipts are always a year behind when they're paying. When they pay on July 1, this coming year, it's based upon the money that they had gross in 2009, not 2010.
Does everybody understand what I'm saying on business license?
So I'm not too sure if that's the effective way. But again, council could do whatever they want to concerning the business license. But when we start talking about reducing business license, the bang for the buck, so to speak, does not help the vast majority of the businesses that have come before you in the past.
What flexibility, Roger, do we have with that furniture fixture tax?
That's a state mandated, Kim, if I recall, furniture fixture.
It's assessed by the state.
It's assessed by the state and passed to the county. And then,
it's our same bill.
It's another million, right?
About $874,000.
So basically businesses now are paying more than a third. So that's a million. And then you've got the property tax from businesses, correct? Commercial property tax.
So again, that's fixed by the state. And the only thing you can do there would be to lower the millage. And if you lower the millage, it's got to be not for businesses, it's got to be for everybody. So everything's based on the millage on that portion. About a third of our budget comes in on the business license, about a third comes in on taxes. The vast majority of the rest is service and fees, garbage, fire, etc. So, again, I just wanted to show you that, explain it to you, give you a little bit more of a comparison as to what we have. Again, our conclusion was you can leave it as it is, or you can try to lower it, but there might be some other ways. And again, as you start talking to the chamber, the ABA, I mean, there's all kinds of different groups that you probably need to talk to. I mean, this is one group. Chamber represents over 1,000 businesses. ABA represents even other businesses. And I'm sure each one has similar, but maybe different issues that you might want to hear about. And any time council talks to a group, then, you know, it is a public meeting for any and all businesses to come into. Again, as I was saying, when you take out the big five, about 2.3, it gives the median, it gives the mean, shows you how many. Again, that information was in your package. Again, just to give you some background towards what the business license is.
Right, your facade grant program that we have, still have. Is that strictly for downtown?
That's strictly for your downtown.
Suppose we expanded that. That may not be much, but it could be. It could help some businesses beautify their place. And
I'm sure the first year we spent about $150,000. Next year it's
only about 60 or 70 this past year we haven't spent. In other words, most of the business came in right away. We'd probably spend several hundreds of thousands, maybe $1 million the first year. But then it would go down from there as the businesses that maybe had wanted to do some work. So far this year, we've only spent $5,467.
Well, you know,
for the first 9 months.
And here I get into the category of businesses, because you have two companies that's located downtown making billions of dollars. And what would they need for a facade grant? This building across the street needs some painting. But why would they need a $5,000 facade grant?
Well, maybe they wouldn't, yeah. But it could be a mix of
different. But they're eligible. Why not ask for it?
Well, if they need to, it's there available.
That's my point.
The facade grant, the way it works, it's at least 50% with a maximum of $10,000. Yeah. So they have to spend at least $20,000, and then we'll match up to $10,000. They spend $50,000, we still will pay $10,000. But if they only spend $10,000, we'll give them $5,000.
Yeah.
Well, but that's just one of many.
That would be one thing that came to my mind. But
I think it's a good idea.
It could be a lot of different things. You know, it could be different things. The different businesses might not use that, but they might use something else. If we could collectively, with the businesses, come up with a potpourri of different things that would help them. More so than $100 on a business license, maybe $200 even.
Yeah. Ask one question about your data, Roger. I know that you had the median was, 114?
Yes.
Is there any way to break that down? I'll give you a scenario, okay? And I didn't realize this. I mean, in dealing with these Aiken Business Alliance people and getting outside of my own line of work, it's interesting to talk to folks, say, Philip Mary. He actually pays three separate business licenses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he has three separate businesses. Well, the 114 median, I go back to, I think, Fred, what you said Monday night, your wife has a business, okay, out of your home, where she doesn't employ anyone.
I'm sorry?
Where she doesn't have any employees outside of herself.
That's correct.
I think those types of businesses bring down the median. How many of those people who pay less than $1,000 have a brick-and-mortar building with employees? And it would be good to know. Where they pay the property tax and the fixtures, furnishings, and equipment tax, and all that other. Because I can assure you, the folks I talk to, there's it under 1,000. And those are your brick and mortar businesses. Those aren't your sideline businesses, or this is what I do in addition to my real job. That's not, your brick and mortar businesses, at least the vast majority of the ones I talk to, pay more than 1,000.
10% or about 400 pay over 1,000.
Okay.
And that includes your Walmarts and grocery stores and your Belk's and all these other ones. All your big boxes, I'm sure, pay over $1,000.
Well, some of your small boxes do too.
Well, I'm not saying that they don't. I'm just saying it's 10% pay over $1,000.
And those are typically your brick and mortar people who are getting it socked to them all the other ways as well. You see where I'm kind of headed with that? The property tax, fixtures, furnishings, and equipment. I mean, these people are hit again and again and again. Not just from the city, from the state, from the federal unemployment. These are people who are employing people. These are the ones that are being hit the hardest. Just know that when you're thinking about it. That median may say something, but I don't think it accurately paints the folks that are out there employing the citizens of Aiken.
Now, Roger, does that median also include the 2,380 that's outside city?
Yes.
So if we were to take those out, we'd pay double. And the inside businesses would probably be less.
Right. And again,
say that again, Don.
The $114 median includes 2,380 businesses that pay our business license fee from outside. Their business is located outside the city, so they pay double the rate that a business located inside the city would pay. So having those 2,380 businesses calculated in with that median would drive it up way higher than it ought to be where the business is just located within its inside the city.
And those 2,380 people don't pay city property tax or city fixture furnishings and equipment tax. They might pay double the business license tax.
They probably pay the furniture and fixtures to the county.
Yeah, but I pay city and county.
You pay a furniture fixture to the county also?
Yes. Businesses in the city pay city and county. And city and county property tax, commercial property tax, which is more than what you pay at home. And we pay business license tax. Yours is half the county, your fixtures, furnishings, and equipment. So we're getting, and we're the ones who employ people. We have a physical location. We're employing people, so imagine what we get hit with from the state. And now you're starting to understand why we're whining so much. Because it is a lot of tax dollars we pay between the city, the county, the state, and the public.
Is there a percentage that is calculated for your furniture fixtures?
Yeah. I'll be happy to look it up. I've got the bill.
This is the business.
Okay. But we pay it for the city and county. So our county brethren might pay double business license tax, but they're only paying county property tax and county furniture and fixtures tax. We're paying both. So we're representing a whole lot more than just a third of your budget when you take that into account.
Any questions on the business license? The white pages, the first section here, gives your revenue, and then we get into the expenses, and again, that's all in the general fund. So these first 104 pages are general fund budgets.
Let me raise a question about a couple of specific issues. The police grant.
Yeah, sir, page.
Oh, it's on page 8. I think it's
$188,000.
What is it for? Is this a DUI?
No, this is the COPS grant, or the community-oriented policing grant.
Okay.
And it pays for 4 officers.
And it's going to pay for them for
3 years.
3 years, with a requirement that we keep one for the 4th year.
Not on that grant.
Not on that one.
3 years, salaries and benefits for 3 years.
Okay.
100%.
From your vantage point right now, we have added, from the HEAT grant, we added, was it 2 or 3 from that?
Two.
From your perspective, do we need 3 more additional public safety officers on the force?
For the COP grant?
Yeah. Well, no, I guess what I'm asking is, forget the grant, do we need 3 more people? Because that's essentially what we're doing, even though they're free for 3 years.
And that gets down to that zero-based budgeting. How quickly do you want someone to respond to a call to public safety?
Yep.
2 minutes, 3 minutes response time, 4 minutes?
We've never discussed it.
And so that's what we get down to is, I know towns that would probably, on a per capita basis, probably have half the police officers we have. The response time's longer, neighborhood programs. And so the council's going to have to answer that.
I understand. I've been at a place where I called 911, and 30 minutes later, somebody showed up, and it was in the county. And it was disastrous. Didn't turn out to be.
So do we need any more?
Yeah, that's my question, I guess. Do we need 3 more officers, given that we're in the middle of a recession, growth is slow, do we need 3 more police officers?
And again, it comes down to response time.
Well, what's the response time if we don't get it, Roger? And what's the response time if we do get it?
It's 1 person less per shift.
Okay.
So you've got 1 less per shift.
And how many per shift?
How many per shift, Joe? 8, 9, 10?
10.
10 now?
10. So 10% more response time because you've got 1 less officer.
Okay.
How else can I answer that?
Well, I don't know. Given that, I mean, if I just think we need to assess whether or not we want to accept the grant, and I think the acceptance has to be based on the need for 3 additional police officers. I understand what you're saying and how you're explaining it. I mean, if the police chief says we need 3, then fine, we need 3. But I mean, we've got if there's 10 to a shift right now, I'm not hearing any complaints about our public safety department. On the contrary, I get more accolades. And I've had them in my neighborhood. One of my neighbors had to call 911, and our guy was there within less than 2 minutes and was very, very effective. So, and I think that's the kind of city that we want to have. My question is, do we need three more? That's all I'm asking.
Are these the community-oriented policies that we're talking about? I think we need them. I do. If you live in my neighborhood or close to my neighborhood, we need them. We have some areas where the crime rate is a little higher than where other people live. And I think any time you can be in a position to lower the time of response, it tends to maybe make it harder for people to do things and get by with them, so they're less apt to do them. I assume that if this is a grant, that someone applied for it. Or was it handed to you?
No, we have applied for it.
You applied for it and you were given it. And I'm thinking that if you did not need it or couldn't justify needing it, you would not have gotten the grant. Am I correct?
Correct.
So I guess the answer to the question is that maybe it's not needed other places, but it's probably needed in some parts of the city where you probably wrote that into the grant.
No, I'm just thinking at some point in time, if we're to police this, then we can. I can be in your office 5 days a week telling you how to do your job. You know what the crime rate in chief was in communities years ago, where people were afraid to come out of their homes during the day. And we've made communities safer. And we need to police everything that you are doing, every assess, every grant that you're applying for, determining every dollar that you spend and how you spend it. And we can all do that. We need to find out from our constituents, is that what they want?
Well, one of the things I kind of emphasized when I was running for the office was make sure, you know, with some of the trends going on in the city with the gangs trying to surface and what have you, I want to make sure the chief has whatever resources that are available. And community policing, I think, is a good step in the right direction. What we do with them after 3 years or so, I'm not sure, you know. But I think we can't go wrong by having these people available to us.
I don't want to be the police chief. I've been there, I've done that, I have no desire to do it again. But I think it's fair, I think it's a responsibility to ask on the budget, I mean, why are we doing this if we're not willing to ask? If he needs three more, sure, let's go with three more. If he doesn't need them, then we shouldn't have them. That's all I'm asking. It's the only reason I raise the issue. At some point, given the geography of the city, at some point, don't know when it is, we're going to say the police department is big enough. I don't know when
that
is.
Were these vacancies that were created?
These are three vacancies that we have that we had not filled, and then they gave us an extra one. So these were approved probably 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, and through attrition, when we went into the recession, we just didn't fill them. And so what's happened is probably the best way to describe these are going to be individuals that work in the neighborhoods. And so their 40-hour week, instead of being on patrol, they will primarily be assigned to a neighborhood like Baldwin Park or Tool Hill and try to go ahead and work with the citizens, get to know the citizens better. Probably the best example that I give, and a couple of people here will remember him, a guy named Chico Nieves. Everybody remember Chico in Crawlin Park and in some of the other neighborhoods because Chico was always there when you needed him. So what we did is we had three less people in the community operations for these neighborhoods and put them in patrol because we were short. And that was the first place to take them from. So in some of the neighborhoods like Beverly's talking about, and Lessing, primarily on the north side, we don't have one or two people in some of these neighborhoods. And so we're not going to be able to take people from patrol. And one of the unfortunate things, it takes a year from the time you hire someone to the time that they're really on the street ready to work for you. Because they have to go through not just police training, they have to go through fire training also. They got a couple of months of fire, they got about 3 months of police. There's usually gaps in between. And then depending on how much time they have before they went into the training, then they have on-the-job training with another officer. So it's year, a couple more months, depending on where they got hired and trained. So these are going to be neighborhood officers, not patrol officers, that allow us to then keep the staff on the patrol.
We've had them before.
Oh, yeah, we've had them.
And they've worked. They've worked
well. Before we get too far off the subject, how come AT&T and Bell South and MCI and everybody else is taking out of the budget as far as revenues go on page 7?
Because we put them all under a general category of telecommunication. Instead of them all being separate, we lumped them together as telecommunication.
They change their names every other year.
Yeah, that's how I got my AT&T bill. I was making sure I was still paying the
we've gone from
fee to okay.
The names keep changing.
What are other professional services generally?
Where
page 22 is one time it's gone up. You make 37,866 is only up through March, Kim, or April? March, probably. Now it's up to 60,000.
That pays for our judge. And if we need an assistant judge at times when she's out on vacation, that's sort of pays for Tracy Carroll's salary.
Okay, so they're not city employees, but we just...
No, they're contract employees.
Okay.
And then the $62,279 that pays for Ben Moore.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions on the general fund? I mean, we can go through it. Line items or however you want to do it. The next section in yellow is still general fund, but it's giving the personnel, the number of personnel, how many are full-time, how many are part-time. When it shows you a salary, you could look back into the white pages and you see the salary at the top line. And so it would give you every person. The pink pages right after that give you your capital. And it tells you where the money for the capital is going to come from. So let me just take page 132. If I was looking at the yard trash, and it shows a street sweeper, and then it shows another vehicle. That vehicle is a grapple unit that we're going to be buying, and they're $125,000 each. And it tells you where my asset number is coming from. This is money that we actually have in depreciation to pay for that unit. So all these asset numbers refer back to another vehicle and the amount of money we have in depreciation to pay for that particular vehicle. The small sweeper is not a large one. This is one that an individual rides on. It's an open, almost like a golf cart size, and it runs in the downtown area primarily. If I wanted to compare that, if you turn back to page 78, those are the white pages for the solid waste, for the yard trash that we have here. This is the large piles that they pick up in your front of your house. And the last two line items are machinery and vehicles. And you can see that they ask for $48,000 under machineries. That's the street sweeper that we just identified in 132. Department request, and then the manager's recommendation. Vehicles, same thing. When I get it from the department heads, they actually give me the description of it. It'll tell me all about the vehicle, how old it is, how much they spend on it on a yearly basis. And gets all of the particulars for that particular vehicle. So that's how we go from the budget to this other area. So it's, again, if you ever wanted to look at it from detail to detail, the white pages are defined more through the pink pages for any capital items. And how it tells the department head later on, because all they're doing is they're asking for this equipment. And then I identify how that equipment's going to be paid. Now, last year, Richard Pierce worked with me on the utilities, and this year, Richard Pierce worked with me on the general fund, so that he would get a much better understanding as to how this is all displayed and detailed on out. Then as we get into the blue pages, that's your enterprise fund or the water and sewer account money.
the funding in here for the revenue on page 140. It's on page 141. Under sewer and water revenue, it's the second and third line down. That includes the funds that you just approved for 11.3%. So it has the money built in here for revenue under that 11.3%. If you had not approved it, then we would have had to change the numbers in the next column of city council. Let's say if you only approved 5%, we'd have been lowering that by 6.3%. But I made the assumption when we drew this up that the revenues were equal to the expenditures. One of the things within the budget, we had a lot of questions on it as to this $1.2 million. If you, that's the right page. Now you have revenues. We look at that. Okay, on page 160.
Yeah, 160.
About a third of the way down, you'll see water and sewer system depreciation, $1.2 million. Last year, because we did not have an increase, council turned down the increase, we asked for 5%. That's why you see in the budget under 09-10, second column, $985,000. Because we didn't even fully fund the depreciation going into the budget. This year with 11.3%, it's fully funded. If for some reason we sell more water this summer, that $1.2 million could go to 1.5, 1.7, whatever the number would be. If we don't sell enough water, that $1.2 million goes down a lower number. Last year we didn't have any money coming from the $1.2 million. In fact, we had still a little bit more of a negative. But that's where that money comes in to pay for future capital projects. The area where we're seeing the largest increase in utilities, if you turn to page 163, and about halfway down is sewer treatment, ACPSA, Aiken County Public Service Authority. It's $2 million. That may or may not be enough money, but we're hoping with the 8% increase it will be. That number was under $1 million 10 years ago. What we're paying them, and that's our charges that we have for the sewer that we're paying for at Aiken County. As Dee was asking about, what all the things for the city, when we have things that are shared with the county, the state, and back and forth as to what our services cost. Same thing like with the general fund. You have yellow pages here with the number of personnel. You have pink pages showing here the capital that's within the utility budget on the various items that we anticipate spending next year.
Roger, is there a way we could go back into negotiation with the county and maybe?
We right now have retained an attorney, us in North Augusta, because we feel that some of the charges they're making, for instance, a line was built down to Kimberly Clark. Great, I'm glad they built it to Kimberly Clark. It added jobs, but they're asking the citizens of North Augusta and Aiken, City of Aiken to pay for that line. And that line was well over $1 million. And so we're saying that's not fair. We should not be paying for that capital cost. North Augusta, as you're going towards Augusta, there's a little pond right before you get to Clearwater Road. I think it's called Lakeside Baptist Church. And there was a sewer line that was being built on either side of it just before you get to that bridge. Well, that's being built by North Augusta. That's called the Mims Branch. It costs several millions of dollars. Well, we found out that for the last few years we've been paying for both those lines. And we've objected and said that's not fair. And so we haven't paid them for a year and a half now. We complained for a while and they didn't do anything, so I told Kim to quit paying them all the depreciation.
We pay partial.
So our attorney is talking to their attorney, which when all this was happening was Jim Holly, and so we think we're getting close to a settlement on that. But again, you asked about that. It was 1979 when the plant was built. It had a 30-year contract on it. The 30 years was up last year. And so part of that negotiation on these other lines is, let's renew our contract. And so we're in the negotiation of that too. That's a long answer to your question. I haven't discussed an awful lot with this thing with the sewer, because we just don't have a lot to discuss yet, other than the fact that I made a decision not to pay based on the fact that we felt they were mischarging us. And I'm sure there's going to be negotiation. We may have to pay a little bit. But, so we've just been holding back our payments on that.
Are you on Roman numeral budget?
Yes.
You make a statement, much of this increase is due to adjusting salaries to maintain our department's competitiveness in the rest of the CSR area. Can I assume that those are salary increases within public safety?
We have had to make several adjustments. Every year, we try to go ahead and review a fourth of our salaries with other governments and then with also the private sector. Or if it's not every fourth, sometimes we've even gone in between and said there was a year that vehicle operators were losing a lot of vehicle operators right after, shortly after the commercial driver's license went into effect. And so we started making comparison, and for a couple of years straight, Kenny Cook compared our commercial drivers to the private sector and to the public sector. And we made a couple of salary adjustments for two or three years in a row. And that went into the budget process. Public safety was the same thing. There was a period of time when Wackenhut at the SRS was hiring a tremendous, and we lost
half dozen to a dozen officers
to them. And so we saw what their salaries were. We also looked at North Augusta. North Augusta raised theirs to not fully match them, but come close. And so we raised our minimum up by several thousands of dollars. And because of that, this is competitiveness. That's why some of the salaries, and that's one of the reasons why public safety has jumped as much as it has. Because it's not only with the rookies, then you have to make not as much of adjustment for the midterm or higher, but it's kind of incrementally goes on up.
Might seem like I'm picking on public safety, but I'm not. Page 46, we have salaries, wages, and we have a pretty high number on overtime, which is going to probably raise your budget.
Which?
Page 46. And this is just the patrol fire.
Now, they get hired an awful lot. You might see them at the movie theater. You might see them at football games. You'll see them
maybe some of the other places that they're hired by.
Was this for an extra event?
Yeah, extra events. Duty? Yeah, high school games at the banks.
So are the people paying us for them then?
The extra duty is paid special.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's the special paid special overtime. That's about five lines down, $40,000. And then your other ones, you got shift differential, and what's the other overtime for, Pete? Patrol.
You asked what shift differential is?
No.
You got $45,348 for overtime on page 46. Is that?
Right. Yeah. Any holidays?
Yeah. Do you have a holiday pay? You got a court pay. You got the special overtime. What's the other overtime for?
You talking about the paid special overtime?
No. Just the second line. Overtime.
So overtime. That's just when they work overtime. You know, we have to always have so many people there. You know, if you have people who are sick or on vacation, for instance, the firehouse, you can't leave vacant fire station.
How much of this do you think is with a fire engineer?
Probably a good bit of.
Because I know we get paid a lot. So in other words, we have within this budget. Look at the yellow pages. It's a good question, Dave. I know you're not picking on it.
Pete, is some of that perhaps when you have special raids and you're working with the other departments, North Augusta and federal and state? None of that. You know, you're going out on a special.
We have 20 people that are classified as public safety driver operators. Those are the ones that are in. We have five substations, so you have a person at substation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. obviously, if there's a fire, they're going to be working more than their 12-hour shift, and so they get paid overtime. If somebody all of a sudden calls up and is sick or whatever, or doesn't make it in, then that also would be overtime. And so the majority of the folks that I see with overtime are in these 20 individual folks. We have a couple that are, we call them floaters, but we always don't know, and they're going to cover the vacation and times that we know they're going to be gone or extended sick leave, but otherwise, then it's a select group of folks that we have to have there at all times.
And several departments throughout the budget, I noticed auto damage claims, general damage claims, usually have not been budgeted for. Is that turning out, developing into a problem?
We decided, at one time, we lumped all the damage claims into one line item, and so let's say it added up to $100,000 a year. And so we asked Kim, the finance, to put a line item in each budget so we could go ahead and track if a particular department or particular even division was causing most of these problems, we can identify it more easier. And the same thing with workers' compensation. Not workers' compensation, but the other one, you know, it's unemployment. Or workers' compensation, too. We have that one, too. So we have broken those out, each one. Some years they use it, some years they don't. But that at least then gave us a chance to track it. Okay.
Now, workman's comp comes off of injuries.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Not unemployed.
I guess we're doing some of the funds. People, especially new guys. Okay. Then we have our individual funds that, again, each one has to go ahead and balance with the other one. So we'll start on page 181. We have stormwater. It's on the utility bill. Everybody pays it. We know how much money it's going to bring in. It's got a balance with the expenditures. I mean, we don't have a choice. We can't be overspending the revenue we get in. If we are, then we have to come with a rate increase. And we've only had one rate increase in stormwater since 1993 when we instituted it at that time. So, again, that's a balanced budget. The yellow sheets, again, given the personnel, and the pink sheets, just tell you that the three areas that we are looking at doing stormwater are in Carlson Park, Rye Patch, and at Government Acre Park. Now, Reggie asked me a question earlier today. We were talking. He said, well, what if this Whitney Trust, you're going to do some stormwater work? That's why it will come back to City Council. And you will vote on it because it's not in this year's budget, it's not in next year's budget. And if you want to do Whitney Trust, you'll still come out of stormwater. We've got reserve funds to pay for our stormwater, but it's not in the budget, so you would approve it if we're going to do Whitney Trust or the Whitney Fields storm drainage. Same thing if we're going to go ahead and do a pavilion that they would like. It's going to come out of accommodation tax money, it's not in the budget, so again, council would be approving it. And anything that's not in the budget comes back to you always as a council meeting approval.
The stormwater field can come out of the accommodations?
Mm-hmm. Not stormwater.
Theoretically it could, but it's not, in my case, it would not be the proper area. We do have a budget here for stormwater, and since they are paying a stormwater fee and all the people around them are paying a stormwater fee, the best place is to take out stormwater.
Yeah, I would hassle with you and you put it in the accommodations because that's not, that is stormwater that's coming off. I mean, it's coming from the rain and it's coming from somebody's sprinkler system.
I'm looking at the purpose of the field.
Yeah, well, then as I said, you could stretch it. Okay.
Well, you deal with Citizens Field or one of the parks, you'd run into the same thing. You know, I agree partly with what you're saying, and your accommodation tax would go to improve the field, possibly, but not the drainage of it.
Roger, page 150.
Get rid of the water.
Sorry. Yeah.
150?
Yeah, when we're talking about the employee at the playhouse, somewhere here I read that
150?
150. No, 190, I'm sorry. 190.
Okay, good.
New graphic. Somewhere I read that somebody else was paying 3/4 of that salary, and this is 30,000?
That is correct. The
person can't be making 120,000.
No, this is the full amount that they get paid. If you look on page 187, and under support contribution, which is about fifth line down,
okay,
21,000 is
that's
coming.
21 and a third.
It's coming from the other agency.
Okay. Now I'm on page 192. Just so Glenn can feel he came here for a purpose. Is that saying essentially that we have to pay to get a baseball tournament or a tennis championship and so forth?
Yes. There are certain fees associated, bid fees. Then there's also certain responsibilities as the host that we do, and that's part of our bid fee. So when my staff travels to the tournament, we're in competition with cities across the southeast and the nation.
And then if we win it, we've got revenue coming into the city?
Yes, sir.
And does that net out for the most part?
No. You have to look at the accommodations tax that goes back into the hotel, but Citizens Park as itself would not be in the black just based on the tournament.
So the only way it's in the black is from the accommodations tax.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah. And the business license that goes, you know, because people are going out and the hotel stays.
Yeah.
You know, it's all the other things that the businesses want us to do.
It's the same
all
things together.
Okay.
Yep. And then on page 193.
But Dick, let me answer another thing. We also take out of here because we know that those tournaments bring in overnight stays.
Yeah.
So if they say that we have to provide a lunch as part of this or some kind of a tent party or whatever else, if you look under that same page, 192, you'll see the baseball tournaments. We don't have any baseball, but we are going to have tennis championships here. So we got $5,000. So if Glenn has to make t-shirts out, or if we have to provide a tent out there or some food out there, he's got some money. We also put some money in what we call up here at the very top special outside events, which gives him some flexibility so no city dollars go in to this tournament. The only extra money that we would have to come up with would be he may have to have some staff people out there. If it's softball events, grading the fields, doing some work on the fields, tennis tournaments, the same thing. But and then we get gate fees in, we get concession fees in from it, and then there's all the other extra stuff that comes in through your businesses that they.
But
they
it still doesn't net out unless we include the accommodations tax.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay, on page 193, the building improvements at $63,500,
yes.
And what is that?
It's nothing. We don't have it designated. This past year, we had $100,000 in that budget. Next year, we have $63,500. I don't know what the money's going to be used for. If it doesn't get used for something, in other words, if we don't go back to City Council and say, again, I'll go back to the pavilion. If we don't go back to City Council and say we want to build a pavilion using the accommodation tax dollars at the Whitney Fields, then that money of $63,500, just like $100,000 that's not designated this year, will go back into a holding account
and
goes as a reserve.
And $110,000 for the railroad depot?
Correct. Now, that what that would do
you
is...
You need to use the right words there. It's not for the depot. It's for the part of that area.
It's
for the
railroad depot parking.
Yeah, it's at that location. We got the depot that will be finished. But then we got everything outside the depot, which they have to put in some footings for that roof eventually. They're going to have to put a deck in there, the roof, the baggage cars. And over the next several years, we'll hopefully be able to put some money in here towards that. Is $110,000 enough to put the footings in? Yes. Is it enough to go ahead and put the deck and the roof on? Probably not. So if that's the case, we bid it out. We don't have enough money. And we have within the city codes $25,000 flexibility. So if it's over $135,000, I'd come back to City Council and say, we want authorization. The roof and the deck came in at $180,000. And we got $110,000. here's where the money's going to come from. You either say yes or no.
So we're controlling essentially what happens at the depot.
Right.
Roger, and can you explain to me Whitney Field and what who owns it?
Whitney Field is owned by a trust, Whitney Trust. The Whitney Trust also owns all the pole fields on Powerhouse Road. They own the Cavendale Golf Course. They own the tennis courts, which are right out back here. And they probably own a couple other really miscellaneous ones, but those are the big ones.
And all of this is public?
Quasi-public, yes. Public events are held there. The trust controls how it's used. Soccer tournaments are held at the Whitney Polo Fields, Bluegrass Festival, polo events are held there, and they've had, I believe, the Balloons were there 1 year. They have various things that could be there that's open to them.
And very generous.
Yeah, be sure it's not open to the public as a public building would be, because, you know, we got into that when we were talking about the wine and these others. So,
well, see, this surfaced when we were discussing preservation of large tracts of land in the horse district. And this is an issue in that arena where we're going to make some improvements and they're going to guarantee to leave it alone. However, the contract ends up being written, but that's how it came.
Is it public information in terms of how much money is in the trust?
They don't have much.
I know they're land rich, cash poor. Because they don't charge the Aiken Polo Club, and pretty much most of the money that comes in from the membership of the golf course goes back into the golf course. I imagine most of the money that comes in from the tennis courts go back into the tennis courts. So they don't have a lot of money, but they got a lot of land. And so what we were hoping on doing is swapping land, not swapping it, but getting a guarantee that their land will stay as open space for, in this case, 25 years, in return for us doing some drainage work and putting out there a public pavilion that can be used by the public in the future. That's what's going to be coming to the council.
I think, Leslie, you're probably already aware of this, but that land can be sold. All that they hold is not... No, it can be sold off tomorrow.
And how much land are we talking about?
From all the golf course.
Golf course.
The polo fields on Powerhouse Road.
Right, and
nothing. The Whitney Trust owns the Whitney Polo Field and the barns that are there.
Winthrop Field.
Winthrop, they've sold.
Did they sell it off?
To the conservation, Aiken Land Conservancy.
And then the ones that are in the county, too, they own. But it's out of the city. They own some land, some of those fields.
About 8 to 10 pool fields.
So the trust controls how it's used, and we're going to use what money is to...
Accommodation tax money would be used if council approves the pavilion that we would like to see built. And then we'd take stormwater money to go ahead and do the stormwater work that's required in that area, which benefits them and the surrounding properties.
And we still need to agree that we want to do that.
Sure. And if we agree to some of the terms, it might be like it's 25 years, they can't do anything with that.
They can't sell the property.
Yeah. So
and
it keeps
agrees.
Its green space, and restroom use. And
if the council agrees to that, that might be the blueprint that we'll use for some of these other properties.
Yeah.
With regard to the railroad depot, where in the budget is the maintenance, the annual maintenance cost for that facility?
Is that in the 5130?
Yes.
It's in the tourism budget.
I'm looking up.
We have very little money in there because the first year, all the equipment and everything else we guarantee for 1 year, but we do have money in there for power.
Yeah, okay.
So
I read in the paper that there's going to be two employees in there. I hope Barbara Gassman is one. Who's the other?
Barbara's it.
Okay.
We'll have a dose of program. We'll have volunteers who will be the primary contact.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So it's on page 93 and 94.
That's good. You can make this thing up.
Probably,
no, but I asked that question this morning.
Back to that page.
Excuse me?
Page 193, I'd like us to return to that page. Okay.
If we just look at 93 first.
Right.
For instance, if you look under SCE&G, we had 5,000 this year's budget, thinking we were going to move in a bit earlier. Next year, we have 10,000 in there.
Yeah. All right. That's what I guess it was. Okay.
Before we move on to Paul, I'm going to go back to Paul a little bit.
Okay.
How much money is the drainage process with stormwater using accommodations tax?
Well, we're using stormwater money.
Yeah, we're going to be using stormwater money. I'm going to use our own people. Okay. So all I'm going to be doing is buying some pipe over there. I'm looking around $25,000. If I have to bring in somebody to start cutting trees, then I'll probably have to come back to Roger.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, heavy duty is really not
So with in-kind work, in addition to...
It will take us, I'll have a full crew over there, full crew being a Tranco operator, one heavy equipment operator, and two truck drivers. I'll have four people there for about 3 weeks doing that drainage.
Do you know what you're going to do with all the material that you're going to dig out of the ditches?
Right now, we've been trying to chat with the county a little bit to see if they want to use it for landfill cover. Last time we dug a lot of dirt out, they wanted it immediately.
We're probably talking about several thousand truckloads of dirt.
Okay.
Maybe sand out here.
Some of it we're going to actually be reforming the...
Train and track.
There's the train and track form and the berms outside of it. We're going to have to reform those with some of the material to dig out.
Right, I've been working with them. The Polo Trust called me on something, so that's why I'm familiar with it, but they've been in my ear quite a bit. And I've been out there with Larry and Roger both on it, so I'm not putting into their business. I've just been familiar with it.
He's our consultant.
Yeah, I highly pay them so, but they double my salary too.
I'm just comparing the interest in
$193 tennis courts. Is this $20,000 for this courts at Smith Haven?
Not initially, but I did get a phone call from our instructor's name is over there right now. But we're working on this problem. We've had
Donnie Campbell.
Thank you, Roger. This past winter, cold and wet on our hard courts has caused tremendous problems. We've got cracks in a number of them now. We're experimenting with something at the Weeks Center to get us through the tournament that we have in June. And they're going, when they finish the Weeks Center, they're going to Smith Haven to try that on the courts. But this money was not earmarked for Smith Haven courts.
But you will repair those courts on them?
Yes.
The same problem over there is...
Same problem, just the spider cracks throughout the courts.
I have not heard of Smith Hazel. This was for Odell Weeds.
Glenn, are we having trouble with the new tennis courts?
No.
Okay.
No, these are
the old ones.
These are the old four.
That you still play some tournaments on?
We did. We did, and that's why we use accommodations tax.
Page 214.
Okay.
I am... Remain thoroughly confused about our efforts at Grossman Park. I know that the city agreed to incur an expense in sprinkler systems and curbs and gutters and so forth, but I was under the assumption that a lot of the money that was going in to Grossman Park was going to be grant money or money that eventually the owners of the refurbished property would pay back to us. And I'm not, does this reflect that? It just seems to me there's a lot of expenses versus revenues versus expenditures.
If you look on page 218 and 220, the Crawls and Park.
218 and 220.
218 is the revenue. We have some homes that are for rent. They were renting right now until we go ahead and actually start the construction on it. Then we have sale of property. We're assuming that we'll sell several pieces of property this next year. The 330 may be a good number, may not be. And then we have some, the 016, which says operating transfer fund. That's the local option sales tax.
is Old 16. Yeah, it's the north side. We have $250,000 a year in the local option sales tax for refurbishing or rehabilitation of the north side.
That's in local option two, and then there's more in three.
Correct.
Oh, the penny sales tax. Yeah. Half 1.3 quarter million, I think.
And so we're taking some of that money to supplement some of the administration work.
Okay, so that's that fund.
And then you turn the next page, and these are our expenses, some administration fees and work that we're paying with the WIA, some of the workers out there, SE&G for some temporary power, some temporary water.
Okay.
And so again, it's a balanced budget of about $175,000 each one.
And then 221,
we're paying back a loan because, again, we have a $1.5 million loan.
Okay, so you're recommending that one of them, the $300,000, will be cleared? No.
$320,000 would go back to pay back the loan.
How much does the loan have?
$1.5 million.
Okay.
We have to pay interest on that loan.
Right.
You all were pretty tough last year and said, we're going to do work ourselves, but still pay back money to the interest.
Just because you're being so.
I know. We just talked about this last Friday or Thursday. What amount of money are we paying back right now in the interest?
I said about $10,000, so about $20,000.
Right.
But that's interest rate dependent.
Right. And again, as our interest rate goes up, we have to pay more money.
Yeah.
And so the whole idea is, and so far, and what council approved was, if we sell a home and we recover all of our costs being price of the home when we bought it, all the improvements on the property, then we don't go back to city council for the sale of the home. If we get a home and let's say the expenses are $90,000 and the revenue is only $85,000, then we go back to city council and say it costs us more to do this home than.
And you wouldn't be able to use the money on the penny sales tax for that?
We could.
Okay.
But I just told council that anytime we couldn't get our money out of it, we'd still come back to you. We'd come back and say, and we'd get the $5,000 from the penny sales tax or some other place.
Are you going to, I think we'd ask for, at least I'd ask for an update periodically on how many houses we bought, how many we sold, and so forth.
I had a discussion with Lisa Segura this morning asking her, because I know we got about 35 homes. I said, okay, the 35 homes, how many are we renting?
Yeah.
How many are we working on? How many are finished? And how many are vacant right now? So that we can at least start giving you some data.
Yeah, because if somebody asks me how many homes are affected, I'm not sure I can tell them.
We're that close to spending all of our $1.5 million. Close to me. So we, you know, between buying the 35 homes and fixing up a lot of these homes, we keep thinking the first home, we've been to a closing, I think, three times, maybe four times on the closing. Last Thursday, we're on the closing, and IRS came up with an issue. And so they went down to Columbia Friday to try to put the IRS issue.
IRS.
So we do the 35 and then get that paid off, and then we do another 35, or is 35 it?
Once we get the first 35, then we'll have to, at some point in time, I'm probably going to come back to city council and say, okay, we've sold $300,000, we're now down to $1.2 million. I'd like to roll that money over again and reuse it to start fixing up the next
and ultimately, how many do we want to work on?
150. 100 to 150 homes.
100.
Right now, we have an option on 100.
Okay. And that does not include the work that some of the churches are doing and the work that Aiken Corporation is doing. Okay.
Now, the pages that you referred to before, the 216 and the is other work on the north side. That would get more involved with the infrastructure. It also is other homes outside of Paulson Park. Edgewood, we're doing three homes right now. Several of you were at the groundbreaking of that. They're about a third completed. Some really nice energy efficiency that they're doing on those. Those are the first homes we did with Crawl Space. All three of them are theoretically sold. We have notified the banks as of today that we want to close on June 5th.
figured if we say June 5th, and hopefully by June 30th, when this tax credit is gone. But we have three buyers, and they're in the process of getting their private loans.
I just wanted to mention that if council members have not seen the houses before and after, they should go and take a look at.
You're talking about Crossing Park?
Crossing Park. Oh. Look at the work that's being done. Look at how much better they look. And if you get a chance to talk to any of the neighbors and see what a difference is making in the neighborhood to what this is doing.
It's like so many other things. You just can't put a value on.
Right.
On what we're doing here.
Storage sheds are being built at USCA with Habitat. I can attest to that.
Thank you, Reggie, for that.
And we're going to build three a semester. Them and us. And so you get them for about 10% of cost, I think. They're not quite nice. And by the way, the hurricane won't blow them away the time these guys get through putting nails in. There's enough weighted nails to hold them down on the ground.
It's a great project, and I know the people really appreciate the council.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Anything else in the budget?
Only to reiterate that I would like to get started early next year. It's way too late, honestly.
And as I've told you many times, we as a staff, if you want to get started earlier, if you really want to get into a zero-based budgeting, we probably need to start in October and meet at least once a week.
I don't have the rest of the council, but I think we got a zero base at least once. I don't think we got to do it every year. We got a zero base at least once.
Or if you want, you can zero base one department.
We can do one department a month, but at least you start in October.
Yeah, that's up to council if you want to go ahead and start doing that.
It is.
I know Dick does.
What's that? I'm sorry.
If you want to start meeting weekly to go over the budget starting in October to do zero base budgeting, but again,
I don't know, weekly might be too much, but you know, biweekly. My focus is I like the zero base budget one time.
It would take 8 to 10 hours.
Zero base budget.
Just start from scratch and you say, okay, public safety has $0. Now, how many people do they need? What are the wages? And you go right.
What kind of response time?
Okay, you know, I say that only because I've heard different definitions.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Zero base budget.
It'd probably take at least 8 to 10 to 12 hours in each budget. We used to do this in North Augusta. We would meet for about 3 months, several hours. We did it Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night for a couple months.
I'm still working.
How much changes were?
None.
I was just going to say, you know, we've gone through, being in the military, we've gone through zero-based budgeting so many times, and it just comes out the same thing. It's kind of like manpower studies.
The thing is, the only thing, if you have to cut the budget, and we're lucky going to these training sessions I've been to, most cities are having to cut the budget, and that's where it comes effective because you choose your least thing you want to do. But if you've got an increase in budget like we do, which is good, it's hard to go there and say, well, you know, so-and-so doesn't need two people, this, that. We've got to cut the budget.
But, you know, we can sit and talk about the things, looking at the budget, that we would cut first. I suspect that each one of us could come up with a little short list, maybe.
Seven different ones?
Well, absolutely. But some of them would match up somewhere along the line, and if we ever had to cut,
then we
could do that. Well,
I think you've done a great job, Roger, as usual. It's well developed. It's well
structured. You know, we get into philosophical differences, but this will be on the agenda Monday night.
Okay.
Again, it doesn't have any fees or anything else.
Okay, we stand turn.
Wish it were less.
Go back about.
Okay.